Let's start by just talking about where we are. So we're just east of Greenwich itself on the Greenwich Peninsula, aren't we? Which is approximately 30-odd miles from the estuary.
That's right, yes, we're on the Greenwich foreshore, sort of heading in the direction of the Thames Barrier down towards Woolwich.
So tide's just on the way out now. I presume this is a great time to be coming down here if you're looking for stuff that's been washed up.
Yeah, absolutely. I like to come down and chase the tide out. It gives you a little bit more time because, of course, you can't spend all day here. Mudlarking really is tide dependent. So low tide is in about another hour, I think. So it's a good time to get here.
So how did you get into this?
Well, I always loved beachcombing, which is... And I suppose mudlarking is like urban beachcombing. And when I first came to London about 15 years ago, I came down to the foreshore and started to find lots of little bits of pottery and pipe stem. And then I gradually started to find more and more items, such as buttons, pieces of jewellery, bullets and things like that, and I started researching the history behind these objects, and I just found it fascinating.
Where's the best place to start? Do we need to go further down towards
the water? Well, I'm going to head across here to Enderby Wharf, which is one of my favourite places to mudlark. There's a lot of history here. It revolutionised communication here because the first cables that were laid under the Atlantic were made here from 1865, I think. And so I do enjoy going over to that area and often find a few nice bits and pieces there.
I mean, it looks slightly foreboding from this angle. It's a kind of... How would you describe it? A sort of ageing, slightly run-down looking jetty with some industrial gear in the background.
Yes, it's a very old pier. I mean, in Victorian times, there would have been a lot of activity going on over there. There would have been lots of workers, a lot of ships, a lot of people milling around. And so chances are they've dropped things like old pipes, maybe a few coins, buttons might have fallen off, and that's the sort of thing I'm looking for. Little pieces of, little personal items from people, little pieces of history.
Okay, let's head down there. A bit closer to Enderby Wharf. Tell me a little bit about this hand grenade that you found.
Well, yes, that was actually almost exactly a year ago in June. I came down one evening and I spotted what looked like a little metal pineapple. And on closer examination, I realised it was a hand grenade. So I took a photo of it and put it on Twitter and said, I found a hand grenade, I think. You know, what should I do? And so a lot of people said, well, you don't tell the police. So I called the police and the police came and checked that it was indeed a hand grenade. And they called the ordnance squad, who came and detonated it, because it was in fact still live, even after all those years. So that was very exciting.
The whole river was closed down.
Yeah, the river was closed down, and I was able to film the explosion, and it really made quite a bang. And actually it was quite amusing, because the next day the Evening Standard reported the explosion as having woken up half of Greenwich, which would seem to indicate that Greenwich goes to bed quite early, because it was only about 9 p.m. But it was very exciting, and it was probably a Mills bomb, which was issued to the Home Guard during the war, you know, the volunteers that used to defend the coastline during the war. So I mean, I can only imagine that probably after the war he threw whoever it was threw it in the river just to get rid of it. In this particular area here, I came across a human skeleton, which was obviously quite interesting.
Okay, well, I mean, how? What did you see when you came across it?
Well,
what was the first hint that this was a human remains?
Well, firstly, you do find a lot of bones along the Thames foreshore, and some of these come from tanneries. I mean, I'm talking about animal bones. Some come from tanneries. Some come from slaughterhouses hundreds of years ago, and some even come from Tudor feasting tables. So there's a lot of them, but these bones in particular, they just looked very human, because there was the hip bone and two legs and a spine, and most importantly there was the lower half of the jawbone. So it definitely was a human skeleton.
So it wasn't a sort of complete Yorick-style skull or anything like that?
No, I must admit, I've always been looking for the other half of the skull. but, of course, that could have ended up anywhere. But, of course, I called the police again. You do need to call the police if you find human remains, because because they need to make sure it's not part of a recent crime event. And they carried out a forensic test on the bones, and it came back from being from about 1650 or so, or at least in the 1600s, and it was probably from a young man in his mid-20s.
Right. So you're finding bombs, human remains. I mean, what's the legal position for people who might be interested in coming out mudlarking?
Well, for mudlarking, you do need, if you're going to start disturbing the foreshore in any way whatsoever, you need to apply for a permit to the Port of London Authority. And this permit enables you to scrape down to a depth of 7 centimetres. Eyes only, surface finds are absolutely fine to take away. You don't need a permit for that. But once you start to disturb the foreshore in any way, you do need a permit. And if you find anything that is over 300 years old or of significant historical importance, then you do need to report that to the Museum of London as part of their portable antiquities scheme. It's very important for them to know what is found so that they can build up a picture of what London was like in the past.
Yeah, because you're sort of, I mean, it's a form of conservation, isn't it, really? I would describe this as.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, finding little objects, it's just good to know. It can help us find out about the people that lived in London a long, long time ago.
Okay, lead on.
So I'm just going to. Oh, see, look what we found here. That is a part of a little lead soldier. See, there's the legs. Unfortunately.
Oh yeah, you can see the gun.
Yeah, he's missing his bottom of his legs and his head, but he's holding a gun, so that's a little Victorian's child's toy, a little lead toy, so that's great.
So that's an instant find.
Exactly, it's exactly the sort of thing that we're looking for. You know, you can just imagine the child who's been playing with that and he's dropped it well over 100 years ago, and here it is. It's all that's left of somebody's childhood.
Brilliant.
And so I sort of keep scraping here to see if I can see anything else. There's always a lot of metal. Some people ask me if I ever use a detector, and I don't, for the simple reason that, well, firstly, I don't like metal detectors, but secondly, there's so much metal that you would never be able to tell the difference between all this old iron and any other kind of metal. What's that? Something.
Clip a boat going past there.
Yes, and of course, they are eroding a lot of the riverbanks. The mud is washed off, layers of mud are washed off, and so that's one of the reasons we're finding a lot more. It's one of the things you have to be careful of. We'll walk along a little bit and see.
So, just while we're here,
yeah.
I mean, what's the attraction of mudlarking? You know, you seem very at one with the environment here. It seems like a pleasurable pursuit.
Yeah, for me, there's a lot of things I love about mudlarking. I feel very relaxed and peaceful by the river. It's quite a solitary activity for me and very meditative. I think when you're searching for objects down by the river, you're very much in the moment, in the present moment, so you're not worried about the past or the future. It's quite a mindful activity, and I must admit that that's something that I love about it. And also, it's just that you never know what you're going to find. It's like going on a treasure hunt. It's very exciting. So you might find nothing of any great particular value, but for example, we've just found this little soldier, and it's just exciting imagining all the stories behind it.
Yeah, and I bet you get something every time you come down here, even if it's just a bottle stopper or.
Yeah, well, even a button, there can be a huge story behind a button. I mean, one of my favourite finds was a very small brass luggage tag. In itself, very innocuous looking, but on the front of it, it was engraved with a name, F. Jury, 72 Woolwich Road, which is an address not far from here. And on further investigation, it turns out that this luggage tag belonged to a World War I soldier who, in fact, 100 years ago, this coming August, embarked over to France to fight in the trenches of World War I. So it was just like opening a storybook, just finding that one little piece of metal.
And what happened to him?
Well, he went actually to enlist in the Australian army, even though he was English, because he was 43. And we think perhaps it was because he was too old to go in the British army at that time. He then went to fight in the trenches. He was hit by a grenade. He lost several fingers, went to hospital, and he was discharged from the army in 1919. And that's not the end of the story, because actually then I was able to find out where his grave was. And he died in January 1932, and he's buried in Greenwich Cemetery. And I went to visit his grave, and it's a pauper's grave, and it was quite moving, actually, finding his grave, particularly as he had no children. He married his landlady, who was 14 years older than him, and they didn't have any children. So just bringing his story back to life was very special.
And what information was there on that tag that enabled you to pick up his story?
Well, it's quite amazing, really. Just the very fact that there was the address and his name enabled me and several other people who belong to these ancestry sites on the web, on the internet. You could find out a wealth of information, and the Australian Imperial forces, they kept all of the war documents relating to every soldier, so there was a huge wealth of information about him just on those documents, like where he was injured, where he went, which ship he embarked over to Belgium and France on. So of course there's so many places on the internet now where we can find out information. It's amazing.
Great. We're going to go further over here.
Yeah, we can walk along and then walk back up the
So here we are under the jetty.
Yes, very atmospheric, isn't it, under here? Very nice.
Slightly spooky.
It is, yeah, it is slightly spooky. Of course, soon they are probably going to make this into a cruise terminal, so I don't know how much longer it will be like this. I'm rather hoping they don't knock it down. I mean, it really is a lovely testament to the past.
How do you view things like that, sort of changes to the river?
Well, it's inevitable, but it's sad, as particularly along this area of the river, because it is one of the last areas where there is that nice industrial feel, and it's gradually being replaced at a race of knots by these very sterile metal concrete buildings. And so naturally, I would much prefer it if we could keep these old historical places. I think we'll regret it later. That's my feeling.
And where will you, if this place does change, will you just look for a new place to go mudlarking? I mean, do you have to go further out from the city, or?
I've always got my little places, but I shall keep myself further down towards Woolwich, and I'll head out further in out to the Thames Estuary, where there's other places of great interest as well to explore.
It's strange, isn't it, looking across here, there's sort of old ropes hanging off the jetty.
Yes.
They've kind of combined with seaweed into these sort of strange kind of, they're like hanging sculptures, really, aren't
they?
Yeah,
it's very quite ghostly, really. As I said before, there would have been a huge amount of activity here, boats coming and going, people milling around on the piers.
It's a bit Oliver Twist.
It is, yeah, it absolutely is. And I think that's what I love about being down here. It's sort of, you're surrounded by these old stories, and it really gets your imagination going.
So what about the art? I mean, how much inspiration for your art do you take from each item?
Oh, a lot. I mean, I'm currently making fish out of pieces of glass, which I collect along the river here. And for me, it really is the fact that each piece of glass on a fish, and there can be about 20 or 25 pieces, has got a past history. It might be a fragment of a poison bottle from Victorian times. It might be a piece of a bottle from an old tavern. It's hugely inspirational for me to think about the history of those pieces. And I like for people to look beyond the sort of superficial nature of the art and let their imagination go on a journey. In the mudlarking world, we call it getting your eye in. Like, can you see anything down there in that little area down there?
I can see something that looks like a marble.
That's right. Well spotted. And in fact, that would have come from a cod bottle, and children used to break them to get the marbles out, because it was the little marble that sealed the bottle when it was tipped upside down. And so that, yeah, it's a marble, little green cod bottle marble. There would be a lot of bottles and things like that here, because workers would have probably sat on the edge of the pier, drunk their beer or mineral water, and then thrown it in the river. I mean, not much different to what people do now with plastic bottles, unfortunately, except that, of course, the glass ones are somehow more attractive, but it's still rubbish from their day.
Presumably less poisonous, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I don't think that mudlarkers of the future are going to find it quite as fascinating when they find lots of buried plastic.
Plastic bottles. No, you're not going to be making art out of that.
I doubt it, but then who knows? Who knows?